The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Sky Broadband. Get the power to do more with Sky's best ever Wi-Fi.
Now, let me say good morning to Eve McDowell. Good morning, Eve.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
You're very good to join us this morning. Thank you so much. You're in Galway, obviously.
I am.
You're going to tell us a difficult story, Eve, but one that is kind of on the national conscience at the moment. Isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, it's very big at the moment.
Yeah, tell me about life in 2017 and what were you up to before you met Igor Lewandowski?
So I was studying for a year in NUIG from 2017 to 2018.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been in the same college campus accommodation as me. So I was in NUIG studying arts.
Okay, and there's nothing like an arts degree to have a bit of fun in your life, and I hope you had lots of fun up until this point. Were you enjoying it all?
Yeah, I was there for a year, and then I just decided I didn't really enjoy the course, so I stayed in Galway and got a job down here.
Okay, and you remained mixing with your college pals anyway because you were of an age, and that's what happened. Tell me about Igor Lewandowski and how he entered your social circle.
Well, we had some mutual friends in Carr Village. We weren't really in the same circle, but it's a small place, like everyone does get to know everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I never really spoke to him much one-on-one. He used to come into the clothes shop that I was working in a good bit. But, you know, he was quiet enough individual. He didn't have great social skills. He was a little bit introverted.
But people knew him.
Yeah. He seemed to stand out a little bit.
In what way?
He was always around, but he never said much. He was observant.
And when did you kind of think, well, that's a little peculiar behaviour-wise. What was your first inkling, Eve?
I suppose it was maybe April or May 2019.
Mm-hmm.
He had been coming into the shop a lot, and then there was rumours he went off the radar and no one had kind of seen him for a few months. And then he started showing up outside the shop. He used to sit on the bench outside and walk past rather than come in. And, you know, he did used to buy a lot of things in there. One of my friends told me that he changed his Tinder occupation to a rep for the clothes shop that I worked in. Just little things like that.
And they all started, I presume, to add up. You had spoken to him, hadn't you? At a party?
From time to time.
Yeah.
And like a party situation, but that would have been nearly a year beforehand.
Yeah. And from standing around the shop and standing outside, where did it start to progress from there?
There was one morning that I noticed he was outside from like 9:30 that morning. I went to lunch with a friend then in a restaurant just off Fair Square,
mm-hmm.
and I could see him pass by and he kind of looked in, and that's when I told my friend, I was like, look, he's been around since 9:30 this morning. And my friend assured me, look, you know, Galway's small, people do pop up a lot. And then we went and we sat in Air Square, and then we could see him at the opposite side of Air Square sitting in. So told a few more people, I went back to work, and then at 4 o'clock another friend called in and said that she had seen him looking in the window and that he was on the bench outside the shop. So, you know, at this point I told staff and I alerted the shopping centre security that I thought something might be up.
Yeah.
And then I finished work, and when I left there was no sign of him. I went to a pub across Air Square, and I was telling another friend, and then surely enough a few minutes later she said, look, that's him over there. And once he noticed that I spotted him, he scurried out. So we said, like, right, let's move. So we moved to a different pub and we chose a window seat to keep an eye out and see if he'd pop up again. And he did. He was walking up and down. So at this point it was like 10 o'clock at night, so he had spent from 9:30 that morning 10 o'clock that night, he was just around. And after that we went to McDonald's and I could see him walking past McDonald's again. So at that point me and my friend went out to confront him, and he ran down a side street off of Shop Street, and he was crouched down behind a van, and my friend said, what are you doing? Why are you following Eve?
Mm-hmm.
And he just started laughing and ran away. And then that's when I was like, look, I can spot you a mile away with that beard. You're not doing a great job.
Yeah. But it sounded like, oh, you're a big Egypt or what have you. But
yeah.
But it was much more sinister than that, I would imagine, for
it
you.
It was, yeah, and yeah, it, definitely.
Was it hard? Go ahead, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, then like we left, we started, two of my friends decided to walk me home, and he showed up then twice again on the route home. So, you know, that's when I started really worrying.
I bet. Did people believe you, or did not that they didn't believe you, but did you find people belittled it a bit, and not out of badness, but tended to say, ah, sure, look, it's grand, or...
Yeah, yeah, big time. They're like, look, you're just being paranoid, or right. Ah, sure, he's harmless, and oh, he's, you know, he's quiet, he's a bit odd, but... You know,
yeah, it's easy for someone to say that when they're not having a pair of eyes looking at them in the window for 12 hours on the go. I would imagine you probably felt a little bit put upon, to say the least.
Yeah, well, you do question yourself a little bit as well.
Yeah. It's like you gaslighting almost. Yeah, yeah, you're kind of going, maybe I'm imagining this. It's desperate. Take us, if you wouldn't mind, Eve, and in your own words and time, to May the 17th, 2019.
May the 17th. Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out my dates.
Yeah, no, the date I have is May the 17th, when you would have been out late one night and got back to the house.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I went out and I stayed at a friend's house. We shared a taxi back to, she lived in the estate beside me.
Yeah.
And then I was walking back to my house that morning. We never would have locked the front door during the day, you know, always at night. But, you know, I came in, it was 9:15 in the morning, and I just thought... I don't know, something just didn't sit right with me. So I locked the front door.
Yeah.
I went into the kitchen and put on the kettle. And as I was coming back into the hall, I could see a figure looking on. We had frosted glass beside the door, but I didn't recognise it. The door handle then tried to open, and then there was a knock. So I just thought maybe it was a delivery driver. I got the keys just from the radiator beside the door, and I opened the door, and there was no one there, which shocked me because there's steps up to our door. So then I closed the door and immediately locked it. I texted into the house group chat to see if, you know, someone was expecting a package or expecting someone. And then one of my housemates came down, and we went into my bedroom, and he was in the bushes in front of my bedroom with his beard shaved off and his hair shaved off and his eyebrows shaved off.
Good Lord, what a strange transformation physically, if nothing else.
Yeah, I couldn't. It didn't feel real, you know.
Well, this is a gear change then in terms of his stalking, because it's one thing looking through shop window, it's another arriving at your door, and you're now straight to the Gardaí, I take it.
Yeah, yeah, rang the guard straight away. They came down and they said, look, you know, we can caution him, that's all we can really do for now. And I just remember at that point thinking, you know, nothing can be done until something happens.
We'll come back to that, because the fact that it's only a caution, it doesn't feel like enough in terms of protecting people who are being stalked. But that's for a few minutes' time. Let's go along, if you don't mind, Eve, with your story.
Yeah, of course.
As you're doing so well telling the story. And in that regard, we're staying in May, are we, in 2019?
Yeah.
And you, at this time, I take it you're having trouble focusing and concentrating and just living a normal life.
Yeah, like luckily I had a few days off, so I decided to go home, and you know, that's when I realised that the effect had really taken its toll, when I was going for walks at home out in the countryside and still looking over the shoulder, and you know, I hadn't been walking anywhere on my own from the night that from that full day where he followed me. So, you know, I just didn't feel safe anywhere at that point.
Especially your own home. Of all places where you should be feeling the safest. May 27th, Eve, you're at home, and there's developments then again.
Yeah, I came back that day. A friend met me off the bus and walked me home. And then the guy I was seeing at the time came to the house and collected me, and we went into town and got some food. And by this point as well, I had started taking different walkways everywhere, you know, detours, and just changing up the way I walk to and from work or anywhere. So we were walking through NUIG campus, and that's when he said, look, don't look over there, just keep walking. And, you know, surely enough, he was there again. And we went into town. I tried to forget about it, but we were walking back into my estate and I spotted him in the bushes of the house opposite my house.
Okay. You must be sick in the stomach at this stage.
Yeah, yeah. I just rang the guards and ran inside, but didn't know where he was or what he was capable of.
And that uncertainty must have been debilitating.
Yeah, because every possibility goes through your head.
So again, May 27th, I think it was 7 o'clock in the morning, and there's more things happening.
Yeah, well, I rang the guards came at that point and they took statements. I couldn't sleep then that night afterwards. Mm-hmm. I was just up all night. I just had a feeling. I kept thinking I could hear the steps and rustling outside. One of my housemates was sleeping on the couch because she had forgot her bedroom key. Mm-hmm. We were all locking our bedroom doors and everything at this point. So she was asleep on the couch, and once it got bright, then I got up to go to the bathroom, and that woke her up. So I went back to the room and I was kind of sitting up, and then next thing I heard her screaming, saying, "Oh my God, it's him, get out, get out." And just loads of banging, and I didn't know what was happening. So I just jumped up, and I had my hands on the bedroom door at first, and she told me he was gone, and I opened the door and she was standing there with a hammer. So he had actually had scaffolding set up on a couple of balconies down and scaled across. And, you know, he must have noticed her open the balcony door, noticed that she was falling back asleep, and he tried to run past her. But once she woke, he ran towards her with the hammer, and she managed to, throw a blanket over him, which kind of set him off, and he jumped off the balcony then. And we called the guards. Initially, while we were waiting for the guards to come, we could hear banging from, and it turned out to be next door. Mm-hmm. But we thought he had got in the house again, and, you know, we were all in my room with the door locked, furniture up against the door, just
kind of like a horror film. Did you say he built a scaffold?
Yeah. So he had done it a couple of balconies down so that I wouldn't see it. I don't know how long it was there for, how many times he had been up, but
he jumped off the balcony to escape, mm-hmm. and he wouldn't be getting too far now before the guards found him crawling along, I take it.
No, yeah, I think he broke his ankle, so they found him crawling up the road behind the estate.
And what did they do with him then?
They detained him straight away. He has been detained ever since. Now, they managed to find a knife and Viagra below the balcony as well. So they never did manage to get fingerprints on that, but we kind of have a fair idea where it came from and what the intentions were there.
And now you find yourself in court.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah. So he kept appealing the bail charges. So, it was up to the High Court in Dublin, and having to sit there and look at him and talk about it over and over again. And, you know, it really can be re-triggering for victims.
What was that like? You faced him in court, did you? You weren't given the choice of maybe being a little more discreetly positioned in the courtroom?
You do get told, look, he's going to come. My detective told me where he'd be sitting and, you know, advised me just don't look at him. But, you know, his father was in there as well. And it's just strange. It's very strange. Like, it's so surreal in there.
I presume you found it hard to avoid looking at him. I mean,
yeah. Like, he was smiling at me up at the High Court from across the room.
How did that feel for you?
Oh, I just felt disgusted. I felt sick, you know. It just shows the lack of remorse that was there.
How did he plead?
He was saying that he wanted to have a conversation with me. So he pleaded guilty to breaking an entry. But I don't know. He just said he wanted to come in and talk to me.
And ultimately he was found guilty of what? And imprisoned for how long?
So breaking an entry, assault and harassment. There was two consecutive sentences. One was 5 years, one was 7 with 2 years suspended. So basically his approximate release date is the 23rd of March 2023.
You know that date right off by heart, don't you?
Yep, yeah.
Why? Apart from the obvious.
because I don't know where I go from there. I don't know what to expect. I don't know where he'll be or what he might do or if he'll pop up again.
Why do your friends call you the meerkat?
Because my head's always darting around the place, always looking over the shoulder even still.
Are you just constantly on edge?
Yeah, like your senses just get so heightened. You'd be looking out for small little things subconsciously. You know, it's just routine now at this stage.
What's your attitude towards men, strangers, people you might be introduced to?
Just kind of diminishes your trust. You're always kind of thinking, like, even if I just, things can be complete coincidence now where I could run into someone a few times in one day and you're kind of thinking, God, is it happening again?
How are your cynicism levels?
What was that, sorry?
How are your cynicism levels?
Like, initially, I think I just became very aggravated all the time and on edge. But you do learn to, you learn to manage that, and you don't want to let it take over forever.
I'm looking at your victim impact statement here, Eve, and you said, my trust in everyone, especially men, has been completely destroyed. This has distorted my view of people's intentions, shattered my confidence, and has stripped me of my independence. Does that stand to this day?
Definitely, yeah. Like, I won't consider walking somewhere if it's dark, really. I didn't actually walk anywhere unaccompanied until late November 2019. So a good few months after it happened, not even to the shop. It's just the small day-to-day things that people might take for granted that you just have to learn how to redo completely.
How would you characterise, Eve, your experience of the system? The courts, the guards, the whole process?
I find it just quite cold. There's not much support for victims. It does seem to be more a criminal-orientated justice system. It can be very difficult to have to go. Going to court is just, if I don't know anyone that's been to court knows, it's not a nice thing to have to do, but when things get adjourned and, you know, just hoping that it, you know, there's days you go in and you hope that it's going to be the sentencing and that it'll be all over, and then you get told, look, no, something came up, we have to go over it again, and having to sit there and listen to defence solicitors, you know, tell a different story. And I understand it's their job, but it can be really awful for victims. And it's hard as well if you don't have a law background at all, just grasping a lot of the terminology that's used in court. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't necessarily understand what exactly is going on.
It's cold. That's a good word. I think it's very, very cold. I think sometimes legal people might say it has to be for justice to be served. But if you've been through something like you have, there has to be room for warmth.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the treatment of victims, mm-hmm. And the process needs to be just warmed up a little bit in terms of empathy.
There is
emotional
a serious
intelligence.
Lack of empathy.
Did you find that? A serious lack of empathy?
Yeah, definitely. Especially during times of COVID-19, like, I understand, you know, there's restrictions and everything, but just, you know, there was a day that I wasn't allowed to take my father into the courtroom with me. No, I had no one with me for support, but when I went in, his father was in there. You know, so there was a lack of consistency as well.
You know, we spoke to Una Ring on this programme a few weeks ago. She suffered very similar story. And have you been in touch with Una?
I have, yeah. So once I heard she was on the show, that's when I contacted Susan and got in contact with Una, which was great because...
And, yeah, tell me, how helpful is it to talk to somebody else who's been through this, Mill?
Well, like, once I heard her story, I was like, God, you know, she might understand what it's like to feel this way. And, you know, you do start having thoughts that you just feel like you can't say them to other people because you're worried that they'll think you're nuts. But, you know, I knew that she'd understand a lot of the experiences, and she's been a great support. Like, we've been, you know, I consider her a good friend now. We've been in contact since, and... You know, I wanted to assure her that, you know, it doesn't, you will get better at managing it.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
It's not the be all and end all.
there's a text that's come in, Eve, that says, what that woman went through was shocking. I'm being stalked myself.
Okay.
What do you say to her?
It's a much bigger issue. It's a much bigger issue than people realise. My first bit of advice is definitely go to the guards and make a statement.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you'll go down and, you know, they'll say, oh, we'll have a chat to them, or, you know, we can caution them. But I just think, like, if I had made statements from the start, it would have made the whole process a bit easier, because then you're trying to gather dates of when things happen. Mm-hmm. And but the amount of people that have come to me since, and like only just yesterday, like a friend from home was telling me about an experience she's having, and it's much more common than people realise.
Yeah.
And it's shocking in Ireland that there's no law against stalking. Like, there does need to be a reform.
Is there nothing?
Is there
no mention of stalking in the law at all?
No, like, there's harassment, but I do think that harassment, there's such an umbrella of terms under harassment.
Okay.
And, you know, it's something that people are seeing more and more. Scotland have introduced a law, and which seems to be doing quite well.
We should be looking at them then,
and
seeing if we can replicate something here. This is terrifying, says the text. I feel every bit of her fear. I did my college assignment on stalking, and I researched loads of cases, and it's sadly apparent that stalking is not considered a serious enough crime, or something sinister has to happen before it's taken seriously. That's an excellent point.
Yeah, I think that's where the biggest issue is. Like, if there was something to intervene in the early stages, you know, it could help a lot of people. But you do find yourself, I'm sure Una felt as well, that you're just nearly waiting for something to happen.
This girl is so brave, says Emer. It reminds me so much of my own situation. In 2012, I was in college in DIT. I met a man in San Fran, and a man I met in San Francisco in a hostel turned up in my college in Dublin as I sat on the third floor computer lab. He followed me all over for about 8 months. He was eventually arrested. The Gardaí told me he came illegally into the country via Northern Ireland twice. Really scary time, but at least he never found my home address. And I hope that... I hope certainly she's saying about you, Eve, that you can get over the experience. It's 8 years later, but it reminded me today. So she's reminded by your story today. And another says, if I were to choose one thing that would be a permanent game changer, it would be to ask men to start paying attention to other men. Women have carried this burden alone for so long now. Mm-hmm. Where to from here, Eve? I mean, do you feel, having spoken with Una and hearing other stories from people, that this could be the beginning of a move towards some class of legislation and changing the ground rules legally?
Yeah, well, we've been doing some networking. Like, Ruth Maxwell is another woman who I was put in contact with, and she's amazing. Like, she's really getting the ball rolling on a lot of things.
Right.
She is trying to headline some law reform around harassment, and, like, it just really does need to be done. We have a meeting this evening with criminology expert from UCC and a lecturer from UCD and the head of the Irish Rape Crisis Centre, just to kind of, you know, talk about our experiences and gain some knowledge in the areas.
The more you talk about, the more you talk about it to people like me and to the listeners who hear it listening in this morning, I think the more it raises the awareness, obviously. But it's also unfair that are you 21 now? Is that?
Yeah, I'm 21.
To be at 21, you should be enjoying life. You shouldn't have to be forging some sort of legal, pioneering legal legislation in this area. But the fact that you are doing it is so admirable, if you don't mind me saying so. And I really appreciate it on behalf of certainly the women I know. It's wonderful what you're doing. But I do accept the point also that men need to be very cognizant of other men, their peers and friends, and the language around that. I think you probably would concur with that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's great that there's been so much awareness around it at the moment, but we do need to look at the laws. And, you know, until someone can be reprimanded for doing something like this, they're going to keep doing it.
Well, look, let's hope it changes, and we'll keep in touch with us, Eve. Obviously, we're on your side,
yeah,
and we'd love to see how it goes, and give Una our best, won't you, when you're talking to her later?
I will, of course, yeah.
And we look forward to following this story. We won't leave it here at all. We'd love to see the legislation moving along, so we'll keep an eye on it, as anyone listening would. But in the meantime, we're wishing you every success. I hope you're okay, and that life is kind to you in the immediate future, and that it all just works out. You deserve it. So thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Ryan.
Okay, nice to talk to you. Eve McDowell joining us from Galway this morning on her experience. I was stalked as a text in 1985. I still have issues with self-worth and wondering, what did I do to encourage it? And again, that is you're tailor-made, you're purpose-built for counselling, and you'd be surprised, I suspect, at how helpful that would be for you. A lot of men, says the text, don't see what they're doing as wrong because fundamentally they think women should feel flattered by the attention they're getting. They see their behaviour as threatening. Another says, I've been the victim in a similar situation that ended up with an attempted murder case in the Central Criminal Court. The vulnerability I felt at court cannot be overstated. However, the liaison guard in my case got the victim support people in the court involved, and they offered to attend with me, brought me and my partner up to a lovely secure area with sofas and tea and coffee and all that. And during every break in proceedings, and generally were so lovely and supportive. Anyone facing into a similar experience should be aware that they are available. And I think, yeah, don't be afraid. Call the guards. Go deeper again and call your local community guard. I think they tend to be maybe a bit more in touch with where you're coming from, and consider that as an option. Don't be afraid. And victim support at court, or VSAC, is the only voluntary service in Ireland dedicated solely to court accompaniment for victims of crime and their families and witnesses. So you'd be surprised, I think, pleasantly, that the amount of support that could be there if you found yourself in a situation as awful as that. But we appreciate Eve's candour and her time this morning. Very good of her. At 9 minutes to 10.